Okay, we are looking at the last paragraph on the section of Anabaptists in England, roughly page 102. And we're going to repeat the last point on Spurgeon and the downgrade controversy. The downgrade controversy was when Spurgeon began to name by name Baptists in the Baptist Union that denied the inerrancy of Scripture and taught universalism, that everybody would be saved. And he withdrew from the Baptist Union because they would not take any action in terms of all this. And as time went on, he was censured by the Baptist Union. They voted 2,050-7 to condemn him as divisive and a troublemaker. And before that, as we had mentioned, he was the most popular, influential preacher probably in the world. It was fashionable in those days for Sunday papers to have a sermon on the front page. And Spurgeon sermons were on front page of papers all over the world. You had to get a ticket to go to a service at Spurgeon's church because there were so many people. And you could only get a ticket for one service a week. You didn't buy a ticket. I mean, they were given away, but you had to get a ticket. And so you'd get your ticket if you wanted to go Sunday morning, Sunday night, or Wednesday night, but you could not go more than one service because there were too many people and wanted to attend. Well, Spurgeon still remained, after the downgrade controversy, a popular pastor of a large church, but never enjoyed anything faintly resembling the popularity he had before he was censured for being divisive. But that brings us to the last paragraph on that. Spurgeon's concern about the Baptist Union proved to be realistic. Within 50 years of the downgrade controversy, modernism had completely taken over the English Baptist movement. The English Baptist movement. Modernism. Modernism had completely taken over the English Baptist movement. Okay, page 102 on mine, 105 on yours, okay. It's all right. Modernism's like a cancer. My wife went through cancer, a battle with cancer. When they are doing surgery for cancer, how much of the cancer do they want to cut out? All of it. Why? Because if you don't, it spreads. You can't keep it from spreading if you don't get it out. And modernism's the same way. And so, you know, you can call Spurgeon divisive if you want to, but all the warnings he gives turned out to be correct. Today, there are very few English Baptists who still hold to the fundamentals of the Christian faith and the Baptist distinctives. Very few English Baptists. We had a gentleman in his 60s come to Landmark Baptist College when I was there from England. He had been in a Baptist church in England for 40 years and had never heard the gospel. And came across the gospel separately from his church. And I mean, it would just... That's the way it is. That's the way it is in many places. We'll talk more about that today and tomorrow. Today, there are very few English Baptists who still hold to the fundamentals of the Christian faith and the Baptist distinctives. Very few who still hold. Living in a housing addition in Florida, we met a family in a housing addition from England. They were visiting for 6 weeks. They were Baptists. So, we'll fellowship with these folks, and we went out to eat with them, and they didn't believe any of the fundamentals of the faith or any of the Baptist distinctives. They're about as far removed from anything we believed. And I shouldn't have been shocked over that because I've been around modernist Baptists in the United States. But they'd spent their lifetime in a Baptist church there, and it didn't mean anything. Modernism accomplished what centuries of state persecution had been unable to do. It virtually silenced the Baptist witness in England. It virtually silenced the Baptist witness in England. Literally, centuries of bloody persecution had not eradicated the Baptist witness. 50 years of modernism did. And boy, are there lessons in that. Roman numeral 2, Italy, Hungary, and Austria. I don't think I focus specifically on this, but we're going to get to the spread of Baptists around Europe. And Johann Anken and his church, and I'm not sure that's in the notes, should be, Johann Anken's church in Germany becomes an incredible missionary church. And I say Anken's notes aren't in there. It's because everything I've written is not in there for time's sake. But Johann Anken in Germany will start a church that will be one of those great churches again that train people and prepare people and send them out. He sends missionaries all over Europe. And incredible what they accomplished. I actually have in my church a lady who was saved in one of the churches that Anken's missionaries started in Romania. And they just have a tremendous influence all over Europe. And we'll say a little bit more about them in a minute. We're going to probably finish up the notes today, and then I have something special I want to do for an end of the class tomorrow. So we will still be going strong tomorrow, even though we won't have that much, if any, of the notes left. Italy, Hungary, and Austria. Baptists were well represented in many European countries during and immediately following the Reformation. There are records of several Baptist churches in Italy during this period. These churches were vigorously persecuted by the Roman Catholic Church and local governments. A former Roman Catholic priest turned Baptist preacher, Julius Clanfair, was drowned in Venice in 1561. The pastor of the Baptist church in Venice, Francinus van der Sack, along with one of his deacons, was drowned in 1564. No question there are hosts of executions or persecutions we don't even have record of. But you constantly, as I find another story here, another story there, another story there, these folks took persecution as part of the faith. We don't even take inconvenience as part of the faith today. Many Italian Baptists fled to Moravia, others to Holland. Some stayed, and there's a report of a group of over 60 Baptist preachers meeting in northern Italy. A group of over 60 Baptist preachers meeting in northern Italy. Another well-known Anabaptist from Italy was named Tizzano. There's a number of records of him. One of the best known was Camillo Renardi, an outspoken defender of believers' baptism. Another well-known Anabaptist from Italy was named Tiziano. The Italian Anabaptist movement became heavily influenced by those who denied the Trinity. Became heavily influenced by those that denied the Trinity. You study Baptist history, it is not the persecutors who are our greatest enemy. It is the heretics that change the message. And when I was first growing up in Baptist circles, and I'm a young preacher in the 70s, still very fresh are the memories of the fundamentalist-modernist wars from the 30s through the 60s, when the fundamentalists had to come out of the conventions. And so there was this great stress on doctrine and this great stress on refuting modernism. There's a great stress on that, and that was strong in the 70s and the 80s. But as we got further removed from those battles, there began to be less and less emphasis on doctrine and on exposing modernism, and it's like our folks forgot what modernism was. But it is modernism, it is heresy that destroys Baptist movements, not persecution. And you're just starting to see things now in independent Baptist circles, in the name of contemporary churches and being relevant and reaching people, they're almost unimaginable. And sometimes I understood the temptation looking back. Folks say, well, we're too doctrinal, too critical, too much on the prod, too ready to fight. But then you look what happens when you stop being like that. It is the heresy that destroys good churches, not the persecution. While still advocating the separation of church and state, and baptism by immersion, the Italian Anabaptists became genuine heretics in the biblical sense. Genuine heretics in the biblical sense. They denied the deity of Christ. They denied the deity of Christ. Many of the followers of Hans Hut moved to Hungary. They were led by a Baptist preacher named Peter Weidmann. Peter Weidmann, W-E-I-D-M-A-N. They underwent great persecution. Many moved to Russia. Their descendants moved to the United States during the late 1800s. The death penalty was prescribed for Baptists in Austria. Death penalty. King Ferdinand committed himself with devilish intensity to destroying the Baptists. Thousands were burned at the stake. Many were bound together by chains and cast into rivers. In Vienna, an entire Baptist congregation was arrested. The women and children were set free. But the able-bodied men were informed they would be forced to serve as sailors. Impressed into the Navy. They attempted a mass escape and all but 15 succeeded. The 15 who were recaptured disappeared, never to be heard from again. It is known that the Paulicians, Waldenses, Bogomils, we're talking about Russia and Eastern Europe now, Bogomils, Taborites, Bohemian Brethren, Mennonites, and Amish were all represented in Russia. The number of Baptists in Russia seems relatively small until the rise of the Stundist, S-T-U-N-D-I-S-T-S, in the 19th century. The number of Baptists in Russia seems relatively small until the rise of the Stundist, S-T-U-N-D-I-S-T-S. In the 19th century. The Stundists, tracing their heritage to an earlier Baptist groups in Russia, experienced great growth during the 19th century. This was a genuine Baptist group numbering in the millions. This group was heavily persecuted following the communist takeover, but survives into this day. They were heavily persecuted following the communist takeover, but survives into this day. Yeah, we do have some notes on Onken here in just a bit. They have merged with other Baptistic groups as part of the Evangelical Christian Union. Evangelical Christian Union. And the reason they merged with other Christian groups was to try and create some basis for dealing with the government there. And the communist government was hostile to them. The government of Putin is hostile to them. Persecution there is not at the same level in every region of Russia. Pretty much it's left up to the regional leaders, and some are less of a problem than others. But the evangelical groups went together to deal with the government. Well, what's happened in Russia is that modernism has swept through this. Again, with a lack of doctrinal distinctives. We had an interesting and blessed experience at our church. We had a young Russian couple who moved to Chicago. They were only there for about a year. They went to Washington, D.C. But they were both Baptists. They had met in sort of an arranged situation. Young man had grown up in a church that was obviously a Bible-believing Baptist church. He had been taught good doctrine, the gospel, and so forth. Young lady was in a Baptist church, different Baptist church, different town. And so the assumption was that since they were both Baptists, everything would be fine. But she started coming to our church, and this was all totally foreign to her, especially the part about personal salvation. She ended up trusting Christ and getting baptized at our church and growing in the Lord and doing well, and we still hear from them regularly in Washington, D.C. But the contrast was night and day. He had grown up in a genuine Bible-believing Baptist church. She had grown up in a modernist Baptist church. And they didn't realize when they got married that, you know, they were both Baptists. They didn't realize there was a difference. But she had not been taught any fundamental doctrine, had not been taught anything about personal salvation. Again, modernism is the great enemy. Modernism has done more did more harm to the Baptist churches in Russia than communism did. And that is also why you have to be careful when you're dealing with folks from other countries and they say they're a Baptist. That by itself doesn't mean anything. Really doesn't mean anything here in the United States, but it doesn't mean anything there either, because maybe even less, because we're more conscious of the groupings. I have never seen an independent Baptist church that was modernist. Okay. So if I meet somebody there from an independent Baptist church, that's not really one of my major concerns. Most of the people I meet from the American Baptist Convention or the Progressive Baptist Convention are modernists. I might find an exception, but normally. The Southern Baptist Convention is a mixed bag. But if you're talking about somebody who's a Baptist from many of these European countries, the odds are they're modernists. Now, you'll find some exceptions. And again, we'll talk about that when we get to Johann Anken, but you just have to be careful with that. Okay? I have had several opportunities to lead people to Christ who were members of Baptist churches in other countries but had no idea what salvation meant. I know we have some of that in the United States, but it's often even more dramatic. Baptists gained great prominence in Poland. During the Reformation, the concept of religious freedom came to temporary acceptance by the Polish monarchy. And nobles. Many Italian and Swiss Baptists fled there and spread Baptist ideas to the people of Poland. One of the first Polish Baptist leaders was Peter Gonesius, Gonesius. He began a church which was to have great success in planting churches throughout the rest of Poland. Great success in planting churches throughout the rest of Poland. Within 15 years, a meeting was held representing 47 Baptist churches. 47 may not sound like a big number, but when you're starting from scratch, in a few years it is. He pastored a church in Krakow. Say Gregory Paulus was the first name. Within 15 years, a meeting was held representing 47 Baptist churches. Gregory Paulus became a noted Baptist leader in Poland. Gregory Paulus, Paulus. He pastored a church in Krakow, Krakow. Polish Baptists issued a 160-page catechism, for the training of their children. Catechism is a question and answer style format. And we don't use catechisms anymore, though I'm not sure that it's been wise that we don't. They had a catechism, 160 pages, questions you asked Polish children about the Bible, and they worked on that till they could answer all. Those have become almost non-existent in the United States, and I'm not sure that's been a good thing. 160-page catechism for the training of their children. This was produced by the church at Krakow. So for a while here, you have religious freedom in Poland, and Baptist churches are flourishing. Do you expect the devil to look at that and leave that alone? Devil's favorite method seems to be persecution, fire the sword and the lake and chains, committing believers to death. When that doesn't work, the devil doesn't stop. Okay? So if he can't get you with persecution, he's going to come after you and try and get you to compromise to the point that you don't teach anything that hurts him. So again, we come to this story. Unfortunately, the Baptists of Poland came to be dominated by a heretical group known as the Socinians. A heretical group known as the Socinians. Their teachers believed in what we call the Baptist distinctives, but they denied one of the most basic fundamentals of the faith. They denied one of the most basic fundamentals of the faith, the deity of Christ. See, if the devil comes at such different angles, if he can get you to deny the deity of Christ, can you ever look to Christ and trust what he did for you on the cross? If he gets you to deny salvation by faith, he keeps you from being saved. But if focusing on that angle doesn't do it, he can get you to deny the deity of Christ. Okay? Or the devil doesn't care what angle he uses, and he never stops. And one of the things that can happen, and it's so strong in our day, it's mind-boggling, the devil gets you to practice the infiltration issue that we talked about earlier. You let folks in that don't believe what you believe on significant matters. And over a period of time, you lose your distinctiveness. And then after you lose your distinctiveness, the heretics take you over. And at the end of all that process, you become something that doesn't threaten his kingdom anymore. The devil doesn't care if he destroys you by persecution, waters you down through compromise, can bankrupt you through the economy, can destroy you over scandals. But this you need to know. The devil will never stop trying to destroy your ministry. Ministry of the church that you're in. And people have to be smart enough, wise enough, to look down the road a little bit and say, what we're doing today, how will it affect our future? Say, well, if I compromise this today, today I get more people and thus a bigger offering. What happens down the road as a result of that compromise? And less interesting, the devil always keeps coming after you one way or another. He will try and tear you up through internal schisms and people not treating one another like Christians. He's satisfied to do that is make you heretics, but as long as he stops you. And you can't ever assume that today's success is without a price tag in the future. And you have to be vigilant and you have to be aware of these things. Look at this next sentence. This doctrine became so widely accepted among Polish Baptists, there's almost no record of Baptists in Poland who were doctrinally sound after 1570. A lot of folks think in American terms. And so they say, well, you know, fundamentalist-modernists battle in the United States was the 1930s to the 1950s. Maybe you could say 1920s to the 1950s. But you understand, it's the same spiritual principle. The exact same battle got fought and the modernists won in Poland in the 1500s. It never ends that the devil comes after us. And if men are going to be pastors, they have to be vigilant and aware. And they have to constantly ask themselves, what is the price tag of this? What is the price tag of this? I remember one time, my first pastorate, family was visiting the church, lots of talent within the family, very talented. I remember praying, Lord, they're looking at different churches, said, Lord, let them come to us because we could really use their skill set. It would really be a blessing to us. If I had known what they were like, I would have said, Lord, let them come anywhere but with us. I was real excited the day they joined because our church picked up some skill sets that were really beneficial to us. At least by themselves they would have been if they hadn't come with the character attached to the character of the people. Okay? You have to look down the road. And modernism will come at you and come at you and come at you in an environment where persecution isn't trying to destroy you. Faustus Socinius, that's the person this group was named after, F-A-U-S-T-U-S, Faustus Socinius, S-O-C-I-N-I-U-S, Faustus, F-A-U-S-T-S-U-S, Socinius, S-O-C-I-N-I-U-S, was a teacher who was especially successful and who became identified in the minds of many with this heresy. He was a very effective speaker. He was a very effective organizer. But does that make you a good man or a good preacher? Matter of fact, in the hands of a heretic, it's a shame that somebody's a really effective speaker and a very good organizer, because that just allows heresy to advance farther. And one of the weaknesses of our modern independent fundamental Baptist movement, we've become also almost a cult of personality, worshiping the natural abilities of certain leaders. But that doesn't make them doctrinally sound. That doesn't make them morally sound. That doesn't make them ethically sound. And we can't get lost in the natural abilities that a speaker or teacher has. Many a man is effective in front of a group of people who is not a good man. Many a person can deliver a very entertaining sermon who's not doctrinally sound. And you have to be aware of that. Socinius becomes so influential, the entire Baptist group in Poland goes into modernism and is destroyed as far as the cause of Christ by 1570, long before any of the more recent modernists came along that became well known. It's a spiritual principle. In Lithuania, a well-known pastor of a large independent church, John Caper Sr., became convinced of believers' baptism. He was baptized by immersion and openly identified with Baptists. He was later drowned by a group of local hoodlums in the same pool in which he had been baptized. Sometimes people who don't have even any spiritual understanding or bad spiritual understanding like to get caught up in the idea of persecution. Makes them excited. Years ago, 1981, out in Nebraska, the local community of Lincoln, Nebraska, ordered a Christian school to shut down. The reason they ordered it to shut down, it was an ACE school, but the teachers, when the school, were not members of the teachers' union. And Nebraska law required every teacher of any kind to be in the teachers' union, which is a very unjust, tyrannical law. They couldn't get in the teachers' union if they wanted to, because the teachers' union wouldn't accept anybody who went to non-accredited, in other words, Baptist or religious colleges. So they ordered the school to shut down, local authorities. School did not shut down. They arrested the seven fathers of the children who were in the school. When other folks looked at continuing the school, they announced they would padlock the church, except for church service times. You could have 2 hours for service on Sunday morning, an hour and a half on Sunday night, and an hour for Wednesday night. Other than that, the community would padlock the church building. So at the end of a day on Sunday, about the first Sunday of this, about 60 preachers had gathered there. The state police carried the preachers out and dumped them in the church lawn, and they padlocked the church building. By Wednesday night, this is 1981, I'm not sure our men would rally like this. By Wednesday night, there were 1,200 preachers there. And we were dominant in this small town. I went with two friends, and I remember checking in a motel, and they said, "What churches are you from?" I said, "What makes you think we're from a church?" They said, "Every hotel room in town has got pastors in it." And it was an interesting experience, and they assigned people different things, and we actually got assigned to this. They had the building padlocked. They had a man padlocked on the inside, and they had a guard in there with a shotgun to keep people from coming in and having school. And there were a lot of people talking about storming the building, and myself and my two friends actually got assigned to protecting the guard in there, keep anybody from rushing him. And so we just sat outside the door and talked to the guard sitting there with his shotgun in a chair. It's a ridiculous thing. And then we'd have services each night outside the county jail where they were holding the seven fathers. And not only was the local community into this, I'll never forget this as long as I live, just some local people, they thought it'd be funny. They got a pickup truck and they got a couple barrels, and they filled those barrels with rags and coal oil, which puts off a nasty black smoke. And here's the crowd having a service outside the court building. Here's the local folks putting together all this fire in the back of a pickup truck. And when they lit the things on fire, the wind shifted, and all the smoke blew back in their faces. Watching them jump off the truck was one of the most fun moments I've ever had, I do believe. But and they weren't local officials. They were just getting in on the thing. And it was an interesting experience. And they unlocked the church Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. The church had about a 200-seat auditorium. There's about 200 people crammed inside and more than 1,000 of us in a wall around the church. And when the local sheriff came in, they had a sheriff and a deputy. That was the total law enforcement force there. We affectionately called them, during all of this, Andy and Barney. And I don't even know what, didn't even know then what their names were, but that's what we called them. So Andy was demanding, I happened to be right in front of where he was at, he was demanding that we all leave. And we just didn't go. And therefore, he gets in, and you can only hear his half of the conversation. He's in a squad car, and he's calling the state police, who had come previously to carry away the 60 pastors. And they must have asked him how many were here. He estimated 1,000. It was actually a little more than that, but the state police never came. And the church was not padlocked. Long legal battle, but they eventually were able to resume with the school there. But I remember these local guys, they couldn't have cared less about anything spiritual one way or another. They were just local hoodlums. And that's not a new thing or a first. Well, Roman numeral 4 in France. Love this story. In 1810 in French Flanders, a farmer found a Bible. He and his neighbors read it, studied it, and were in 1819 to form an independent church. They practiced believers' baptism. A young Frenchman who had been converted in Scotland, Henry Pite, P-Y-T, Henry Pite, became their pastor. Yeah, man finds a Bible, finds one, doesn't go looking for one, finds one. Another man goes to Scotland, hears the gospel, and gets saved. A few years later, folks who studied that Bible are forming a church, and he's becoming their pastor. Don't think for a second God's hand is not in those things. In 1831, an American Baptist pastor vacationing in France became burdened for the country. Upon his return, he influenced the sending of several missionaries to France. These missionaries worked with Pite to build churches. For several years, they were harassed by local government, but in 1848, religious freedom came to France. That's yet again, you remember, Henry of Navarre brought it, and they had religious freedom for a while, and then it faded, and now it comes back and has held in reasonable state until today. You have to subtract from that the years they were occupied by the Nazis, but that's a different world entirely. During the 19th century, these efforts resulted in starting at least 30 churches in France and sending missionaries to Switzerland and Belgium. The great hero, as we go to Germany, of the Baptist movement in Germany during the 19th century was undoubtedly Johann Onken, J-O-H-A-N, Johann Onken, O-N-C-K-E-N, O-N-C-K-E-N. Again, there are just men in churches set aside for the training of preachers. That is no disrespect to a church that is not set aside for that point. But in every generation, you'll find some places and some men that are uniquely set aside for training people for the ministry. You find it in all kinds of settings and circumstances. Onken is one of those men. Onken was a Lutheran who had the chance to travel throughout Europe for the age of 14 until he was 21. And it was a family thing. Traveled all through Europe. But just as God used Saul of Tarsus early training, God is going to use this, his familiarity with the continent. He became acquainted with an independent church in London, England, and was converted there. He became an independent missionary to Hamburg, Germany. An independent missionary to Hamburg, Germany. Where he began a program of street preaching, book distribution, Sunday schools, and home meetings, that attracted a large following in Hamburg. He began to study the subject of baptism, and he contacted the British Baptist for more information. Now, here's something comparable to the Say Baptist Institute we looked at, where John Smith becomes convinced of believer's baptism, so he tries to baptize himself. And all it did was lead to controversy over whether his baptism was legitimate or not. Well, when Onken became convinced of believer's baptism, he began to look for a Baptist preacher that could come and baptize him. Much better solution. He was baptized by a Professor Sears, a Bible teacher at an American Baptist college who was traveling in France. Onken had endured a great amount of persecution as an independent. He experienced even more as a Baptist. He was imprisoned, fined, and his church services were disrupted by the military. When his situation attracted a great amount of attention in England and the United States, the local persecution was relaxed. Onken ministered in Hamburg for a total of 59 years. That's an incredible story. And there is a lesson to this. Young men who take this course that want to pastor, like to go into pastorates, you know, want to see something in 2, 3, 4 years, sometimes frustrated. The great ministries you read about are virtually all from men who stayed somewhere more than 20 years. And that means in staying somewhere more than 20 years, they really had to go through some things to get to that mark. Well, Onken is remembered as one of the greatest missionary pastors of all time. But part of that is because he stayed in one place for 59 years. The Baptist Church in Hamburg became one of the greatest missionary churches of all time. Within 11 years, they had started 26 churches throughout Germany. And that's impressive by itself. But we're just getting started. Onken, in 1848, official religious toleration was granted. Onken led the German Baptists in forming a missionary association, and beginning a seminary in Hamburg. The church in Hamburg sent missionaries to Sweden, Denmark, Russia, and virtually every country of Europe. It is estimated that literally hundreds of Baptist churches resulted from these endeavors. The church in Hamburg and most of the churches associated with it were eventually destroyed during World War II. And this is why some of the record keeping is limited. Their goal at the church in Hamburg was to start a church in every country in Europe. And it's not known whether they reached every country or not, because their actual records are destroyed during World War II. But you constantly come across references to them in Baptist history in other countries. And one of the things that intrigued Americans after World War II, the communists, Iron Curtain descends over Eastern Europe, and But you're constantly hearing reports of the underground churches there. And the question comes, where did the underground churches come from? And you look and say, well, how did Poland get underground churches? How did Hungary get underground churches? How did all these Eastern European countries? Because most of the Bible-believing churches there were destroyed by modernism in the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s. But there were still churches there when the communists took over. And the churches went underground, and the communists had a hard time destroying them. Many of those churches are the product of Onken's missions. I say we have a Romanian family in our church where the wife was saved at one of the churches directly started by an Onken missionary. The husband was saved at sort of a grandson church, if you will. One of the Onken churches started a church that he was saved at. He spent time in prison for his faith during the communist era in Romania. But there were churches all over Europe. The records of them are spotty. Because Onken's building is destroyed during World War II. And so that's all the records. And the churches in the Eastern European countries, anyway, all had to go underground. And so again, underground churches don't put up signs and write official church histories. 3 years ago, on the 120th anniversary of Ravenswood Baptist Church, I wrote a church history. I will update it and try to expand it for the 125th anniversary in 2 years. But we're not an underground church. Underground churches don't write stories about their buildings and list their officers and tell the story of how they were founded. And so the records are spotty. But people have found and keep finding record of churches started by Onken during that era. And while I can't tell you whether they reached their goal of one in every country of Europe, they sure did start a lot of them, hundreds of them around Europe. And this is just me guessing. I just got a feeling they did reach their goal and that God honored that goal and used that goal. However, in Germany, many of the pastors had previously, talking about the church building was actually destroyed during Allied bombing, but many of the pastors had previously been executed by Adolf Hitler for defying his government. And you read about his execution of the Jews and the gypsies and so forth, which is all true. And the numbers weren't as great, which is one reason there's not as much focus at it. But he required every pastor to sign a statement of loyalty that he was the final authority in the church. And every church had to have a Bible out on its altar and a copy of Mein Kampf. Records of thousands of preachers that were executed for refusing to do that. And in the course of that, it appears that virtually everyone, again, with some limitation of records, you don't want to say every, but it appears virtually everyone, almost everyone, if not everyone, of the pastors of churches that were started by the Onken movement were executed by Hitler during that same process, because they wouldn't sign a loyalty statement and they wouldn't put Mein Kampf out with the Bible. And they were not the only ones. Everything from heretics like the Jehovah's Witnesses to Lutherans and even some Catholics support churches supported Hitler and did do that, but some didn't, all the way through. But the pastors that wouldn't do that were executed. And they virtually wiped out the Baptist movement in Germany during that period of time. And that's why we're sending missionaries back to Germany today, because of that and the circumstances of it. Let's stop and take our break until 10 o'clock.